This is an iHeart podcast.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
There's a mistake we all are guilty of making. It always costs us dearly, and yet we continue making it time and time again. I do it, you do it, everyone you know does it. I'm going to talk about it today. Hopefully we can get that changed. Also, there's a reality of life we have to discuss. We're going to talk about Chinese spies all around us, apparently, and no one wants to talk about that. And the reason, the real reason why the lockdowns are still here. Not just the big ones you can think of. There's another reason the lockdowns are still here and will be here. We're going to go over all that today. But first, let us go. I mean, Jewish producer Chris has a lot of lights on this menorah right now, so I figured it would probably... Oh, wait, how many days is it? Eight? 8 days? What day are we on for Hanukkah? Six? We're on day six, apparently, of Hanukkah. I figured it would be appropriate, especially because of our lesson today, to head on over to Israel. Perhaps you've heard of it. Israel in 1967. Here was the status back then. When you think of Israel today, you think of Israel as an extremely modern, wealthy, militarily advanced, and otherwise society. It just is. They're doing fine financially. Military is top-notch. Maybe you're a Jew hater, which you're free to be, but there's no other way to look at Israel today as it is a very accomplished nation. 1967, it was still accomplished. It was still good militarily. It wasn't close to being the big cheese in that area. Not close. Remember, the new Israel, I'm going to offend so many people today. I'm going to offend so many Muslims. I'm going to offend so many Jews. Just go ahead and fire off your emails now, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. The new Israel, it was very, very new, remember, this new nation state of Israel. I'm not talking about the past. The very, very new one. Yeah, about 20 years. They were still trying to make it, trying to scratch and claw their way, trying to figure out exactly who they were, how they were going to conduct themselves. And we had the PLO now. They were constantly, Israel was constantly being, you know, under these terrorist attacks, targeting civilians. This is not something new, what you see today in Israel. This has been their entire history. And to be fair, we have to be fair. I mean, as you could probably tell, I've always been a bit of a fan of Israel. That goes way beyond my beliefs. I like how they conduct their foreign policy. I like their very direct, very practical manner of conducting their foreign policy. So I'll do the best I can not to build that in, but I figure it's always best if you know my biases going in ahead of time. Israel did plenty of terrorism too early on. They did. People get uncomfortable when you talk about that. Israel was bombing hotels. Israel was killing civilians of their own. The terrorists today who yell and scream about, Israel started all this, that's kind of true. To an extent, though. To an extent. A lot of that is a garbage excuse. Israelis never once walked into a movie theater or an airplane full of civilians and blew it up. Never did they pull some crap like that. But understand this. What I'm trying to get you to see is I'm not trying to even get you to take a side. That's up to you. I'm trying to get you to understand how ugly and bitter and personal this whole area was right now. And your big players for today, there are a couple outside players which you don't need to worry about. They contributed, but it's just not significant enough to talk about. Your big players today are obviously Israel, Syria, Jordan, and Egypt. That's who we're going to be talking about today. Jordan at this point is run by a king. Egypt's run by a guy named Nasser. Again, don't worry about the details. Syria's run by their own dirtball. Now, we have to do a brief setup on these other three countries and where they stand at the time, and I'm going to do the best I can. You know how I don't like to kill you with details, but I'm going to do the best I can not to make your eyes glass over, whatever you want to say. Jordan, as I said, run by a king, but not an all-powerful king by any stretch of the imagination. He is a man constantly worried about coups. Jordan doesn't have a gigantic military. They do have some elite troops, though, and they certainly have an air force. We'll come back to that. Jordan also, at this point, is in control of Jerusalem. You don't think about it that way, but Jordan was running Jerusalem back then. All right, that's Jordan. Syria. I know you're going to find this shocking, but Syria was a hot steaming pile of garbage back then too. They were historically Soviets. I mean, the Soviet satellite thing. There's a reason the Russians are still involved in Syria heavily to this day. They were heavily, heavily beholden to the Soviets. And remember, this is 1967 we're talking about here. If someone's beholden to the Soviets, that's somebody that's going to have our full attention. And the Soviets are constantly sticking their nose in Syria, in Israel. They're constantly sticking their nose in this conflict. They just are. Soviets, like all leftists, including the leftists today, don't look at anything and say to themselves, we shouldn't really go there. They want to have their sphere of influence be, well, let's start with everywhere. They're not going to let this area go without sticking their nose in. Syria, they're kind of a funny actor in this thing. I don't want to use the words clownish because of what happens in the end. Because there are parts of this thing that did get really nasty with Syria. But Syria almost seems like a big, gigantic buffoon to me. Their leader is belligerent. He's belligerently threatening Israel at all times, constantly telling, I'm coming to invade, we're going to kill the dirty Jew dogs and all the... I mean, constantly saying things like that, agitating. But Syria wasn't that tough. They just weren't that tough. They had people, yeah, but they were... I don't want to call them a paper tiger. That's not fair. On paper, you can look and think, wow, they're almost Israel's equal, really. They just were not that strong militarily. Egypt was another matter, and Egypt will be the focus on most of our story today because that was really the main focus of the war. If you, on paper, by any stretch of the imagination, Egypt alone should have slaughtered Israel in this war. They just simply weren't, they didn't have the numbers. Here are some numbers for you to lay this out. Between those three nations, and yes, I know Iraq was involved a little and Saudi Arabia involved a little. Forget about that. Just focus on the three I'm talking about today. Here are some numbers for you to show you where Israel was. And remember, pull up your map. Look at Israel, Jordan, Syria, Egypt. Israel is surrounded at this point. The Arabs have about 240,000 men, Israel 100,000. The Arabs have 957 Soviet MiGs, Soviet fighter jets. Israel has about 300, mostly French planes. The Arabs had 2,500 Soviet tanks. Israel, about 800. Those were mostly American and British. Well, you're surrounded and you're outnumbered. What do you do? I'll tell you what they did in just a second. Plus, Chinese spies everywhere. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
Natural medicines, holistic healing approaches, they're known to help alleviate things. The things that plague us. I mean, sleeplessness. You have any of that? I know you do. Joint pain. Woke up in the middle of the night last night with no explanation. My shoulder hurt. It happens as we get older. Anxiety. I know you have some of that. I see my emails. Well, I choose CBD. And doctors trusted CBD. What they sell is B-Best Organics. USDA certified organic, and this may be the best part about B-Best Organics. They test every batch. Believe me when I tell you, the CBD you see out there, most of it is not tested like that. Every batch, you get the best. Go to doctorstrustedcbd.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That actually gets you 5% off and a free lip balm. We're going to talk about a reality of life kind of thing in just a little bit. One of those things that's it's a bitter pill to swallow. Nevertheless, it's important that you swallow. Please grow up, Chris. Please. Now, Israel's surrounded. They're outnumbered. And Egypt is the main problem here when it comes to numbers. That's for sure. Israel does have some real advantages, though. And here's a great, gigantic hint for what's going to come at the end. Israel has spies everywhere. And I do mean everywhere. They had one spy, codenamed Suleiman, in Egypt. Throughout this entire conflict, this Suleiman guy he hated Egypt's leader. This Suleiman guy, and I should be clear, Nasser in Egypt, he was the leader of Egypt. But the Arab world, let's take a brief sidestep here for a second. The Arab world then, and I guess you could say now, but the Muslim world really is constantly fighting with itself. We don't think about as much in the West, especially when we were really struggling with Islamic terrorism here and things like that. We would do things and say things that really weren't grounded in reality. It's easier to simplify everything. Oh, those dirty Muslims. What does that mean? The Muslims are fighting each other. Remember how this all started. You had the Prophet Muhammad, and then the problem came right after him. Who was the successor? Was it this person? Was it that person? Now you've split between the Sunnis and Shiites, and then they all split. So there's splits, and then there's splits, and then there's splits, and then there's violent splits. And then you'll get in countries like Egypt, like this is a great example, Egypt in the 60s, where, yeah, Nasser's a Muslim, and yes, Nasser's in charge. He has more hardcore guys trying to take over, less hardcore guys trying to take over. There's a constant spat with each other. They're constantly, and that's what makes it difficult to deal with it, because you want to simplify everything. I want to simplify everything. It would actually be easier if the Muslims are bad. That's not true. They're fighting each other. Some are actually helping us. Many are. Many are not. It's you can't simplify things that much on the world stage. It's not how it works. And at this point in time, yes, he's in charge of Egypt. Yes, Egypt is fairly wealthy, good army, but there's so much division there. And one thing the Arab armies really, really, really struggled with, and Israel's army to this day is so fantastic at, is allowing your commanders in the field flexibility. Oftentimes, especially Egypt at this time, oftentimes an Arab army is run more rigidly, which you want discipline, you want people to follow orders, but a general sitting back in the air conditioning at headquarters will tell this captain out there, move to this exact spot for 4 hours, then move to that exact spot for 5 hours, then take this exact hill. Well, you don't know the conditions on the ground. Israel will give you a concept. Go here. Do your thing. Let the man on the ground adjust and move, and that's a great aid. Now, granted, you need capable field commanders to be able to do that. Otherwise, you better micromanage them. But Patton so famously said, don't tell a man what to do. Don't tell a man how to do something. Tell him what you want done and let him impress you with your ingenuity, with his ingenuity. That's how you run things. That's the situation on the ground. Israel has a bit of a problem. You see, on top of the incursions with the PLO, that Syria is doing things like shelling Israeli settlements. Israel's in such a bad place geographically at this time, where its enemies that surround it, its enemies who openly talk about ruining it, can actually shoot weapons into it routinely, and Israel can do precious little about it. Then things start ramping up and the rhetoric gets more heated and more heated and more heated. Now, Egypt's guy, Nasser, was constantly threatening war, but didn't really want war. Why would you do such a thing? Because it helps you gain power. As a politician, nothing helps you more than a good old-fashioned patriotic war on behalf of Egypt against those dirty Jews. Yes, if you're unpopular in your own country, that kind of thing can really rally the troops. It can rally the people behind you. It can help fight off any coup attempts. America and Israel, they're in a bit of a different situation right now. Then and now, America and Israel were friends. But what was happening in America, a fairly large event in 1967? The Vietnam War was going on. We had Lyndon B. Johnson as president. He is constantly lying to the American people about the Vietnam War, which we know now. This stuff has been revealed. Lying to the American people about the Vietnam War. The American people are getting angrier and angrier about the Vietnam War as we see more people dead. They're trying to explain why they're dead. It's just, I don't have to rehash it for you what an ugly affair that was. Israel starts talking to America because, you know, Syria's sitting there with the Soviets standing right behind them. And the Soviets are saying, we're coming in if you do something, Israel. Israel comes to America and says, will you help? America says, no, I will not. Not if you fire the first shot. We're busy. Don't you dare fire the first shot. We're busy. Well, now, if you're Israel, you're in quite a pickle, aren't you? Because you're outnumbered and surrounded. You have to fire the first shot. You don't have an option. And they're telling this to Lyndon Johnson. What are we supposed to do? And they're arguing internally in Israel, too. What should we do? We know we should go early. We know we should go now. Oh, we can't. We're going to lose our friends. Remember how delicate it is there constantly, still, to this day. Israel makes the choice. And I should say Egypt makes the choice really easy for Israel. Israel gets shelled a little bit more than usual from Syria. Word gets to Egypt that Israel is sending its troops up towards the Syrian side of the border. Egypt, they think this might be a really nice opportunity, so Egypt takes its massive army, remember, much bigger than Israel's army, and they send it right over to the Israeli border looking like they're getting ready to invade. If you're Israel at this point in time, you have no choice. And let me tell you something, kids. Here's the thing about being in a fight. Nothing worse, Nothing worse is taught from the movies than, you know, I would never hit somebody unless he hit me first. That is from the idiotic old westerns we all love. That's from the action movies. In real life, if you know you're going to get in a fight, you hit first and you hit hard. Period. That, little Timmy, make sure you never hit someone until he hits you first. Yeah, have fun with that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. That doesn't work at all. Israel has to hit first. Well, what are they going to do? If you're Israel, what exactly can you do when you're outnumbered like this? They come up with what, in my opinion, was one of the most brilliant battle plans I've ever seen in my entire life. And there are a million and one parts of this story I'm not going to get to, but I'm going to try to focus on knocking out this next couple things before I wrap things up here. Remember, there's a reality of life we all have to deal with, and it's probably going to help us in this country going forward. And there's another reason. There's another reason for the lockdowns we don't talk about as much. We haven't talked about as much on this show. It's more than just politicians wanting power and loving power. That's obviously a big one, if not the biggest one. But these coronavirus restrictions, why are they still happening? Why don't they look like they're letting up? They're ramping up. Why? I'm going to tell you why. Hang on.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived in Philadelphia. Local time is 3:05 p.m. and the temperature is 67 degrees. At this time, you are now free to use your cellular devices.
You know that feeling when you get to turn your phone on after the plane lands? You can have that feeling every time you drive. Make sure your cell phone is stowed away whenever you are behind the wheel.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I might answer an Ask Dr. Jesse question today. Somebody wants to know my opinion for the best home defense weapon. I think I will answer that just a little bit later in the show. First, let's try to get back to the Six-Day War of 1967. Israel surrounded on all sides. Egypt amasses its troops on the border. Egypt decides to really ramp this up a notch. They close the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal, by international law, cannot be closed. They tell Israel, you can't come here anymore. Well, Israel can't stand for that. Israel also knows they absolutely cannot have a long war because they don't have the money, they don't have the resources for it, or their country is going to cease to exist. You and I don't understand exactly what that's like. But as we've talked about for peoples all over the world, it's just different when you're defending your homeland versus when you're going into someone else's. If I told you to stand on the sidewalk outside of my office building right now and stop a man with an axe from coming inside, how hard would you fight, or would you fight at all before you simply stepped aside and thought, I mean, I hope he doesn't hurt anyone too badly? Now do that same situation out in front of your home with your wife and little babies inside. How hard would you fight now? Yeah, a little differently. When you're defending your homeland, you fight differently The Arabs hated the Israelis, hated the Jews, huge resentment there, huge bitterness on both sides. All that's fine. The Arabs, the Egyptians, Jordan, Syria, they weren't fighting for their very existence. And you're going to see that come into play here very shortly. Israel does something that is brilliant. They know they have air inferiority in numbers for sure. They don't have near as many planes. They have excellent pilots, excellent fighter jets, but they don't have near as many planes. They're not going to be able to compete. And they know they're not going to win against all three of these countries unless they can get the upper hand in something really, really, really important. You know what's really important in combat? Air power. Hugely important. Israel decides to strike. They launch their planes, but nobody knows they launched their planes because the intelligence for Egypt and Syria and Jordan sucked. Israel launches their air force, and this is the plan. They fly their air force out to sea. They fly it low so it's not picked up on any radar. And then they fly out to sea and then hook a left and come on down. The plan is to wipe out Egypt's air force on the ground. First, they drop these awesome, and I do mean awesome, runway-destroying bombs. What takes a bomb from being just a bomb to runway-destroying? Well, they made these bombs in collaboration with France. These bombs, they drop them on runways, and instead of just a big crater, you know, I know what you're thinking, a crater would be good enough, right? Not really. People have the ability to go out, fill in said crater quickly, and then fly your jets right down the same runway. These bombs that Israel dropped, yes, they penetrated the runway, but what they had was a second rocket that fired off before it hit the ground, so it makes a hole in the runway and then explodes under the ground, creating a sinkhole. A sinkhole. So you just have, you know, pavement on top, but if you step on it or drive over it, it'll crumble. You can't fill that in, and that expands more. You've just destroyed the runway. They take out all the runways, race back. They're coming in waves. The Egyptians didn't respect the Israelis, didn't have the proper facilities. Their planes are lined up wingtip to wingtip, and the ones that are covered are not covered in armored hangars. They're covered in tents. The Israeli Air Force swings right back around and takes out virtually the entire Egyptian Air Force. Gone. Then they start taking out the Jordanian Air Force. Jordan was already shelling Israel at this time. Israel knows, though, Egypt is who they have to take out first. They've taken 70% of their troops down towards Egypt. They know Egypt's the one really to worry about. They had all the intelligence on who to worry about and who not. Now, they have people up in Syria fighting. They have people towards Jordan fighting. But Egypt's what they're worried about. And in one of the all-time arrogant, bonehead moves that honestly probably loses the war right here for the Arabs. I say at this point, maybe I'm wrong, I say at this point the Arabs could still come back and win this thing. That I don't want to say easily, but I would say the odds are still pretty even. Arrogance can kill you. Doing things for political reasons, saying things for political reasons, so you look good in the press. You see any of that in America now? Saying things just so you look good in the press, it can be fatal. Egypt is sitting there with a smoldering wreck of an air force. Virtually no air power. I think they lost over 80% of their air force gone. And the rest of it isn't close enough to do anything about. They're finished. They have no air power. Egypt tells Syria and Jordan that they have wiped out the Israeli Air Force and that Israel's virtually helpless now, that it was a huge win for Egypt. Syria and Jordan are now emboldened. That's great. Let's go get them. Little do they know. Virtually the entire Israeli Air Force is perfectly intact, and now Egypt can't provide you any cover either because their Air Force is gone. gone. Focusing on Egypt here again. Egypt or Israel at this point pulls. Well, when it comes to Egypt, they pulled something. I totally get that they pulled. But you need to understand this stuff happens to you, and the left uses this tactic all the time today, and you need to be ready for it. Israel intentionally creates a fog of war because while they didn't attack first, they did attack first. Their army hit first and hit very, very hard on the world stage, especially in front of America, in front of the UN. They can't present that face as being the aggressor here. So Egypt steps up and says, Israel attacked first. Israel, instead of denying that, steps up and says, absolutely not. Egypt attacked us first, which was not true at all. But if you're Israel, the fog of war, the confusion, is more of a win than owning that right off the bat. They couldn't afford to own it. So they lied. And they lied through their teeth. Israel very much attacked first. Jordan is still shelling, remember, while this is going on. Syria is still shelling while this is going on. Now, I did a bunch of different reading on this because I didn't want to be too much of an Israel homer here. However, I don't see very much that disputes this. Israel, and a lot of this was for political reasons, I'm sure some of it for the, you know, morally right religious reasons, Israel really focused hard on military targets. They tried to avoid civilian targets as much as humanly possible. Yes, there are religious reasons. There are international reasons to it. But there are also military advantages to that. It doesn't really benefit Israel to just wipe out a town full of Muslims. They don't have the resources to kill civilians in military. You have to take out their military. The Arabs did it differently. There was such hatred there for the Jews. And there was hatred on both sides, but there was such hatred there for the Jews, they focused on civilian targets a lot when they should have been focusing on the military. All right, I'm going to wrap this up. This is going to be the fastest wrap-up in history. I'm going to do it, Chris. And Chinese spies. Hang on.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
My favorite weapon of all time. That is going to be a difficult question to answer, but I will answer it. I will answer it. No, I'm not going to say a tomahawk because I don't have my tomahawk yet and I want one. But again, my problem is when it comes to buying the tomahawk, I want it. I want it badly. I'll be tempted to grab it if somebody breaks in instead of one of the weapons, instead of one of the guns. I mean, who doesn't want a tomahawk kill? I've seen The Patriot. What, Chris? What? All right, back to the six-day war. We have coronavirus stuff to get to today. We have to talk about a brutal reality of life, Chinese spies. I don't have time to get distracted by Tomahawk talk right now. We will get to it in a little bit, I swear. Israel pounding on Egypt. I'm going to finish up with Egypt, although the timelines are overlapping a little bit here. Egypt has no air cover. Egypt decides to listen to the Soviets. The Soviets are giving, you know, all the Arabs guidance at this point in time, and the Soviets say, here's how you need to line up your formation. You know, troops in front, artillery right behind, things like that. That's a way the Soviets had defended themselves in places like Stalingrad. They'd used this before, this line of defense. Well, here's the thing. That line of defense works really well if you have air power and they have air power. If they only have air power, then all you've done is line up your troops like sardines in a can for the Israeli air power to absolutely bomb into smithereens. And they do. They start not only bombing these Egyptian positions, Israel, because they know they don't have time. They have to wrap things up. They need to pull these troops elsewhere. They do not have time. They start doing something that can be death in war, or it can mean victory. You have to do it. You have to make your decision on whether or not the risk is worth it. What do we talk about all the time about war? Amateurs study tactics. Professionals study logistics. I found it was actually a Marine Corps, I think, colonel or general who said that. I'll get his name. Robert Barrow might be his name. Look that up, Chris. I want to start crediting the right person for that. Now, oftentimes that means you have to have your supply lines. You have to have your food, water, bullets aligned back to your supply. It's critical. Not if you don't have time and you're going to die anyway. Israel starts risking getting their forces cut off to simply blow through the Egyptian lines, surround them, get behind them, and seize important military parts or completely envelop units and wipe them out. That sounds really cool until it fails. If you're facing a coordinated, intelligently led enemy who will cut you off from your supply and hold up from being enveloped, you are finished. You are essentially surrounded in hostile territory. However, if your enemy is already on his heels and poorly led and they're looking around and in their mind the Israelis are everywhere, it can work really well, and it works really, really, really well. They start stomping the Egyptians into the ground. Egypt's army was led by a group of weapons-grade morons. They start not communicating at all with their commanders in the field. They'll just pack up their stuff and leave town and not even tell the captain out there in charge of a unit, we left already. The officers start retreating on their own. The Egyptian army is essentially finished. Now, again, the timelines are overlapping here. It was General Robert Barrow. Nice. I'm going to start crediting the right person for that. Now Israel turns its attention to Jordan. Jordan has some elite units, and Jordan is in control of Jerusalem. Israel wasn't sure if they wanted to go after Jerusalem. But they have some vicious fights with Jordan, and they make the decision, let's go after it. And they go down and fight their way through Jerusalem. They called it the old city. They still call it the old city. Supposedly, this was supposed to be a moment. If you read the things from the men who fought there, this was a moment they'll never, ever, ever forget. The UN at this point is calling for a ceasefire, but the Arab nations are so arrogant. And remember, Syria and Jordan still think they're winning because Egypt told them the Israeli Air Force was taken out. The Arab nations say, no ceasefire. We're doing fine. And they don't realize they're already on their heels. Again, arrogance gets you, doesn't it? Gets you every single time. They reject it. Israel does take Jerusalem. Now they turn their attention to Syria. The Golan Heights, I know you've heard about them recently. They're trying to run the Syrians out of the Golan Heights. There's a very difficult approach to the Golan Heights with rocks and boulders. The Syrians choose to lightly defend that part of it because they think nobody can come in from that part of it. Uh-oh, turns out the Israelis could. They storm in, they take it. Israel's now doing things like dropping napalm on enemy convoys who are driving down the road as they're retreating. Israel's getting their pound of flesh now, boy. Israel won in 6 days. And in 6 days' time, Israel tripled the size of its own country. Tripled it. I want to tell you something. If this war fascinates you, and it is a fascinating affair, you and I have to have a talk about something real quick. Hang on.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
One, this is an awesome conflict I can't possibly do justice to in just the first hour of my show. If it fascinates you, go read up on it. Go look it up. It's wonderful. Two, it's time for us to accept something about the reason we still have restrictions and the reason we're going to have restrictions. And this is going to be tough to follow, a bitter pill to swallow. One thing you should have learned from that story we just talked about there, a mistake you make all the time, a mistake I make all the time, is not knowing your enemy. Allowing your hatred of your enemy, like the Arabs did, allowing your hatred of your enemy to cloud your judgment, to cloud your ability to see them. You know why Israel won the Six-Day War? They were very practical about who they were and who the Arabs were. Yeah, they believed in what they were doing, but they believed intelligence was the key. We're going to talk about the reason we still have restrictions coming. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly Show.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, it's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum. Sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.